And a big welcome back to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 253. I'm your host, Dave Erickson. Thanks for joining me this week. We have a very special guest for the entire podcast, Coach Erin Carson from Boulder, Colorado. She's the co-owner and operator of Rally Sport in Boulder. She's been there since 1991. In addition to running the club, she also runs EC Fit Boulder, which we'll talk about quite a bit in the program. It's a strength program designed for those looking to become their very best. Her clients include world champions, Olympians, and everyday athletes looking for that extra edge. She's a strength coach for many current and former world champion athletes, including Miranda Carfrae, two-time ITU world champion Flora Duffy, and Tim O'Donnell, also known as the husband of Miranda Carfrae. Just kidding. Both of them are new parents this year, by the way. And we're going to be talking about Miranda's training now, where she is, and a special program that both Erin and Marini have put together. Erin is also a triathlete herself. She's actually a former University of Colorado scholarship basketball player, and she went on to play professional basketball in Europe. She was one of the top NCAA D1 basketball players, and now, of course, she's a coach and also an active triathlete. She's our special guest today, and you can find out more about her at ecfitboulder.com. Let's get started. My first question is how does a professional basketball player end up as a triathlete living in Boulder?
Well, said professional basketball player went to college at the University of Colorado because Boulder is such an epic place, and that I chose that on purpose. The transition that happens out of a skill sport into an endurance sport is usually out of necessity, not to get out of shape. And I'm in the fitness business. You can't play basketball forever. I mean, you can, but the level gets boring. Mm. So it's just one of those things that I did really well when I was younger, and I like to do things well. And so there's no professional basketball league for 40-year-olds. So I kind of made a shift into endurance sports, and that's a pretty natural shift if you live in Boulder, Colorado. And I'm a strength coach. So I was also a basketball coach at Division I collegiate basketball. And most of my role with a lot of those teams was the strength and conditioning part of it. So I've been doing strength and conditioning for performance for quite a while. And it really has become my passion. And I love Ironman, and I love half Ironman. And I love when people just stay fit. And there's a downside to doing endurance sports and loving them and not doing strength training in conjunction with it, because injury, lack of progression, there's hormonal factors that come into play that I think we're having some really positive impact using good heavy weights. So just kind of transitioned into something I'm super passionate about, which is performance and helping people get better.
Did you discover the need for strength and conditioning during basketball, post-basketball, pre-basketball?
Yeah, but it's one of those, if I knew then what I knew now. Mm-hmm. You know, we know so much more about movement than we ever did. And when I was a young strength coach, we left a lot of the movement-based stuff and a lot of the understanding of the impact of running. Let me just talk about running on the body and how it wraps as you land, gravity and ground. That wasn't really accessible or considered in the 90s if you were a strength coach. You were just squatting and deadlifting and a lot of the traditional Olympic lifting. And we weren't really addressing some of the inherent tightnesses and weaknesses that come from repetitive motion sports. The physical therapy world was kind of dealing with that, usually in a, you know, they're trying to repair somebody. So we started to develop into more of the prehab, and can we prepare this body to withstand those forces mm-hmm. in a better way and maybe avoid injury? And that's when things started coming, more information started coming to strength coaches. We started to become more active and proactive in avoiding injuries rather than just push stronger, bigger, stronger, faster. And you know, my passion isn't bigger, stronger, faster. That'd be more football mentality. But most of my education comes from that same realm of education, which is, you know, your dream is to coach an NFL football player. Well, my dream wasn't that. My dream was more, you know, I really think Miranda Carfrae is amazing. and she's here in Boulder, and why can't I help her? Or Timothy O'Donnell. And those are my marquee athletes right now because they're world champions and whatnot. But I've got a lot of young up and coming triathletes too, who, you know, they see what Tim and Rennie are doing and they want to get on board as well. And so I think we would be hard pressed now. I've been with Tim and Rennie, this is our fifth season. And I know that when we started, not many people were doing what we did and are continuing to do. But I think we'd be hard-pressed to find too many of the pros and age groupers who aren't actively including a strength component and see the value of it.
When I grew up in the late 80s in junior high and high school, I was introduced to the bigger, faster, stronger. So the bench, power clean, towel bench, deadlift, and then plyometrics were involved. And as I've gotten older, I've recognized as a triathlete, endurance athlete, I have to go back to the basics and fix what my strong muscles have done to my body, to where I'm inflexible in certain areas, where my muscles were too strong in some areas. And now I'm into Taekwondo, which has been a great experience for me to discover my hip issues, lower back issues that are too tight or too strong, weak areas. What kind of activities or training elements do triathletes often neglect or are coming into with deficits?
I think the biggest thing that we can start with most of us as triathletes is to understand the effect of gravity and ground on the body. And so if anyone out there is just listening and they want to just stand up and then look down at the position of your feet, and if your feet are in this beautiful straight line, I'd be a little surprised, but usually we see this external rotation in the feet. And so that comes from way up in the hip. And there's this inherent external rotation dominance in the outside of the hip. And once those external rotators become tight, they start to have an impact on the other side. So external rotators are tight, internal rotators become inhibited and they don't function as well. So the goal is to get everything in a straight line. You know, we see so many people with an IT band issue. So we know that when you're running, this force that comes up through your leg on every landing, your knee will dive in a little bit if your hip isn't working well. And then the IT band says, I'm going to say shit. The IT band says, oh shit. And he tries to pull the leg out. Now he's not actively a muscle, but he does understand alignment. Mm-hmm. And the IT band syndrome, you know, we're going to blame the IT band, but where we need to really blame is that glute medius and those tight, inefficient external rotators. So usually where I start is down at those landings. Most triathletes want to talk mostly about the run because that's where they start to feel the breakdown, even though it might start a little bit on the bike, some weakness. Mm-hmm. But we're usually dealing with alignment through the lower body at impact in running. And that can also be affected as we go up further up the chain through the thoracic spine. And you know, we spend so much time down in our drops that the upper back can get quite inflexible as well. Mm-hmm. So we're usually looking to get nice stiff landings where the ankles, and you can just be nice and elastic on the lower part of the body. But then posture-wise, we recognize that that's all part of the package.
So following some of this methodology, you think athletes can prolong their high level or high end endurance skills as they get older if they start to realize how the body works better?
Alignment, 100%.
Yeah.
Yep. And I have lots of mentors too. I mean, one of my, and they don't all know that they're my mentors, but Gray Cook is really one of the smartest dudes that I have learned from. And we can just really simplify, and we look, where does the body need to be mobile? Where does the body need to move and accept force and become a good shock absorber? And there's three key areas that he describes. And number one is the ankle, needs to be nice and mobile. The second one would be the hips, need to be nice and mobile. And then the third one would be the thoracic spine. That needs to be nice and mobile. So when a triathlete comes in to see me, or a runner or a cyclist, the first thing that I'm going to do is make sure each one of those three areas is moving well. And there's a lot of strategies. And that's where I think the exercise library just changes for me as a strength coach. I've got 10 to 15 different ways to mobilize an ankle. Mm. I've got 10 to 15 different ways to mobilize a hip. And I've got the same for the thoracic spine. And we want those three key areas to be moving well before we start to put external load onto the body. Mm-hmm. And everything in between, then we want and expect to be stable. So we need the foot, the bottom of the foot, to be nice and stable. And I think we've all talked a little bit. We've known somebody who has had plantar fasciitis. And that usually isn't as much a foot issue as it is the ankle gets a little bit stuck. So the foot starts to move in ways that it wasn't designed to move. So the bottom of the foot should be stable. The ankle should be mobile. The knee should be stable. You know, it does have the ability to rotate a little bit, but it really wasn't designed that way. So it is a hinge joint, but it does have the ability to rotate a little bit and be a shock absorber. But if it has too much movement, then we're going to get medial knee pain. We're going to get anterior knee pain. We're going to get just knee pain. But I don't go after the knee. I will typically go after the ankle and the hip. We look above it and below it to get those two areas to move better. Same thing, then we move further up. The hip starts moving well so that the low back and the lumbar spine can be stable. And again, it can accept a little bit of movement, but it's really not designed for that. So we want those lumbar vertebrae to be really nice and stable. And then we go up a little bit further, thoracic spine. If it moves well, then the neck can be nice and stable. And the body just stacks upon itself that way. And so that's usually the first 10 minutes of every session, is just getting everybody moving where they should move, stable where they should be stable.
Last year, coming up in about a month or so, the Timex Multisport team came to your facility, and I was doing some things on the outside at the pool. So I missed your session where you were doing some stretching, some balance exercises. And I've done these things before, and I really been able to recognize my deficiencies. Where do you find athletes are discovering or having that aha moment of, oh my goodness, I had no idea that I was inflexible here, or I have poor balance there? And I'm kind of curious about the things that you put on in that one session that was held upstairs.
Well, I think sometimes most people now know they should be stable. They should be able to stand on one foot. And they like to blame balance. I have bad balance. Well, to me, when somebody says they have bad balance, that would imply that they have some disconnect between the nervous system, the brain, and how it's functioning. And I'm usually like, your balance is probably fine. But as you described earlier, you've got some muscle imbalances that if we can just maybe use some tissue release techniques and get rid of some of these adhesions that might form because of repetitive motion. So we start with tissue release always. The second thing we're going to do is mobilize, and we're going to move you in 360 degrees or three different planes of motion. And, you know, three is limiting because there's a bunch of planes of motion. But we just will say three for simplicity's sake. So we'll go ahead and do some tissue release, and it's predictable. It's somewhat predictable. If you're a triathlete, I can guess that that's tight and that's weak, and we can do some of that. And the aha moment I think I had with everybody was, we first did some single leg stuff without tissue release, and they all thought they were really stable. And I was like, I hate to break it to you, you're not that stable. You're probably just tight. So we want to go ahead, let's do some tissue release. Let's do some movement. And now let's stand on one foot. And they realized how much harder they were having to work. And then we start to add different loading strategies that might mimic what our body has to do when we absorb impact. And again, although we're training triathletes, we do spend a lot of time specifically on running stuff because that's where we typically want to spend time. Mm. So we did some tissue release, we did some great mobility, we did some single leg stuff, and we added very light load. And they started to feel their glute medius. So for me, one of the key muscles that I'm gonna work on people and really make sure that they have activation and they have neurological control is going to be glute medius. And that's because in the landings, that's what's going to keep that knee from diving in, and that's going to just be able to absorb that kind of wrapping motion that comes up into the body.
So with that, what kind of exercises do you suggest to build that?
Well, we're going to start with some lateral lunges. And, you know, a lunge by definition is a step and return. So a lateral lunge, specifically for an endurance athlete, we want to keep that lead knee really tight underneath the body. We don't want it rotating like it's going to want to externally rotate and head a little bit as I'm sitting here north, but we want it to be right under the shoulder and facing straight ahead. So we want this really rigid line on the side of the body. So we're decelerating in the frontal plane, just like we have to when we take a step forward. So the lateral lunges is usually where I'll start, but we do a lot of band walking. Mm-hmm. I think most people at this point, you can get on Amazon and buy some of those short little bands, and we play with different, putting them on different parts of the body. You know, we're triathletes and we tend to be pretty hardcore type A personalities. So everybody's like, well, what's the hardest one? Well, my recommendation isn't that you just go for the hardest one. Maybe start with the bands up above your knees and then put the bands just below your knees and then put the bands right at the ankles and then put them around your feet. So from a standpoint of just leverage and just a little bit of physics on where the loading comes from, the feet will be the hardest one. And some people just do the feet, but there's so many variables then between the hips and the feet. So I just try to take some variables away. So we do some band walking with the bands way above the knees. You're going to get much more focus on that glute med and those lateral stabilizers. But lateral hips are probably my biggest thing that I'm constantly undoing tightness and reestablishing great function.
Do you get the surprise look from some of the athletes who come in going, this is what we're going to do today. And I go, really? Bands? Lunges? I'm here to get stronger, faster, whatever. And this is what you're having me do. Low impact, slow movements.
I don't get a lot of that. Because
the high-end athletes you work with, is that why?
Yeah. Hopefully, if they have, the people who work best with me have really good specific coaches and coaches that know them. And it doesn't mean that you have to have a Siri Lindley or a Neil Henderson or someone like that, or a Rebecca Keat. It's really that you're currently in your swim, bike, run training. Mm-hmm. You're working to get better. So when you come to me in the gym, you've done a lot of hard work. You're not trying to do CrossFit-like moves in the gym. You recognize, and my job truly is that the gym stuff doesn't interfere with swim, bike, run. I don't think I'd have the client base that I have if when they went out for a run and Siri was asking Rennie to go do 2800s or whatever her workout of the day was, and she was sore from the gym or she felt fatigue in a certain muscle group that inhibited her. I have to be really careful that those athletes feel really empowered from what they get in the gym. And which is why I'm not a fan of CrossFit. I really actually think that what they're doing for a certain group of people is super cool. But if you want to win or you want to go to world championships or you want to become a better endurance athlete, CrossFit might not be your best choice. Hmm. And that level of intensity should be saved for swim, bike, run. So it's not to say that a lot of the sessions that we don't do in the gym aren't challenging. They are challenging. But a lot of it is more, does this make sense to you in your landings? And then if I can show them why we're doing it, the why behind what we're doing, I get a pretty quick buy-in. And the first couple times somebody works with me and the next afternoon, so if I see them this morning here Monday morning and tomorrow afternoon, they can't sit on the toilet because their glutes are so lit up and sore. Mm-hmm. They know that we did good work. And that won't continue because the more active that tissue becomes, the less it gets sore. So I'm pretty good. I can make your glutes pretty sore pretty quick.
So as today's athlete, today's endurance athlete, recognizing and realizing the importance of doing things that don't involve swimming, biking, and running?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. And you know, and not everybody falls into that category. I do better. My strategies, my programs really work well for people who have really specific goals within our sport. And sometimes that's just, you know, that doesn't mean you have to win. But it might mean I was in the top 25% of my age group, and now I'm in the top 20% of my age group. You know, so if they want to get better, then getting structure in all areas of your training, including the gym, is a really good idea.
So if someone is hearing this and they're going, boy, I've really neglected this part of my training, is it going to be a couple steps back before they go forward?
And well, it's hard to say an absolute because that would be difficult for everybody. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, my programming begins with a lot of mobility. and light loading strategies into fascial lines rather than muscular training. Most people that will come to me who have actively been training, they're pretty strong. They don't need a lot of strength in the first phase of training. They just need to move better. So phase one is really about giving you more access to what you already have. And nothing is more complimentary for me as a strength coach is when I try to get them after a run, and then I try to get them to go for a run or go for a bike ride after our session, and they'll go hit their wattage, and they're like, that I hit 300 watts so much easier than I've ever hit it before. And it's because their hips are more open, their hips are more mobile, and they have more access to their glutes, or they have more access to their upper back. You know, even when they're running, just rotating beautifully in their upper back where they weren't rotating before, they were just stuck. It just is, we use that hashtag easy speed. And that's usually my first goal, is to get them moving better and gaining access to the speed that they know is fast for them, but it felt easy. And that's what the goal is. And then we can build on that.
Mm-hmm. I know our time's almost up, but I saw that you were in Hawaii earlier this year.
Yep.
Is that a coaching training camp?
Well, you know, it's a camp that I've been doing for about 5 years with one specific athlete. Ellen Hart is an 18-time world champion, and she's a mentor for me, a teacher for me, as I know she is for many other people. But Ellen is really good training for me because I'm a little bit better at the swim than her. I'm a little bit better on the run, or excuse me, the biking than her. So she likes training with me because I'm making her better. And then I just chase her in the run. So Ellen and I did the, so we go to Hawaii every year. She has a home there and we get to just act like professional athletes. And now her husband, Rob, is also on board. He's going to do his first triathlon at Lava Man here at the end of March. So we're excited because I'm coaching him. And I don't pretend to be a swim, bike, run coach, but I am swim, bike, run coaching for Rob. And that's going to be fun. But yeah, Ellen and I just, it just brings the year into focus for us. And we did Mooloolaba World Championships 2 years ago together. We traveled together. We race so differently. And we finished within 20 seconds of each other. And she got a trophy, and I finished one spot off the podium. But it was just amazing how you can have those training partners that you can just feed off and get better. So, yeah, that was super fun.
And when does Coach Carson have time to train?
Early in the morning. Yeah, Coach Carson works at a health club, and you'd think that I could get in the pool more often than I do. But, you know, I do believe Siri Lindley is my coach, and I do challenge her a little bit with my timing because if I have a run planned, but then Justin Metzler wants to do a strength session, I'll go for 30 minutes, come back, train Justin, and then go finish my run. And I have some big goals this year too. I'm kind of hoping to qualify for Nice. So I'm July 30th or 29th or something. Yeah. 29th. I'll be doing Whistler 70.3, hoping to win or come second in my age group and qualify for Nice next year. But I think that's what makes me connected to my athletes. I understand when you get to that threshold, and my threshold is obviously much lower than most of the people I work with, but I know what gets uncomfortable, and I know that we don't want that, and we want to be able to push, and we want to get faster, and it gives me a good empathy for them and an excitement for them when they do well and when they have good days. And ultimately, the goal is that they do well and they place and they make money and they go to Kona and they go to world championships and can be competitive. But ultimately, these are young athletes, and we want them to train and race into their 40s and make money and make a true profession. And I do think we're going to see both a male and a female over the age of 40 win Kona. That's a race of wisdom. And I'm really hopeful it'll be my guy, Tim O'Donnell, but just because he's a little bit older than Rennie. But I really feel like we're going to race really strong and really confidently. And I know sitting back, they have great coaches, but I've done my role and given them that platform to really do some hard training with.
You've got great resources on ecfitboulder.com. That's kind of the social media handle for most of your social media platforms.
Yep. ecfitboulder. And I've got, you know, a lot of people from around the world were asking me for programs and stuff like that. So I've actually got a really cool delivery system through a new app. So if you go to the ecfitboulder website, you can read about the app. And I'm super stoked to be able to share this kind of programming. We're going to start doing more custom stuff at the beginning of the summer. But right now we've got Rinny's program, Rinny's Kona Build. She's in Australia right now. And what makes this time, this is perhaps the only time that her training is really relevant for an age grouper and a competitive age grouper or somebody who's just starting strength training as part of their swim bike run, because she's coming off of having a baby. Mm-hmm. And she's more human than she's ever been physically because she's so amazing as an athlete. So Rinny's three phases, each one of them will have 6 to 8 workouts within them. I'm excited to be offering, Rinny and I are pretty excited to be sharing that with the triathlon community. So her program will be pretty fun.
Yeah, you can just click on the programs tab on ecfitboulder.com.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you, Aaron, and thank you very much for posting the Garmin 920 XT on Facebook.
Yeah!
I'm loving
there's
it.
There's my new 735. We love the Garmin, yeah. They should be paying us right now.
Well, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy and you have a lot of great work to do, and athletes appreciate your time. So thank you, and we'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you soon. Peace out. Thanks, brother.
And that about wraps it up for episode 253 of the Endurance Hour podcast. Thanks again to my special guest, Aaron Carson from ecfitboulder.com. To learn more about that program called Return to Kona featuring Miranda Carfrey, go to ecfitboulder.com and click on the programs tab to see the programs involved there. If you have a guest suggestion for the podcast, you can email us at endurancehour@gmail.com. If you have a question for us, you can leave it on speakpipe.com/endurancehour. You can leave that question from your smartphone, laptop, or desktop. You've got a 90-second time limit. Again, speakpipe.com/endurancehour. And that officially wraps up this podcast, episode 253. I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks so much for listening this week. Have a great week of training, racing, and recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios. Today's episode is brought to you by How to Swim Faster in 30 Days, a freestyle guide to dropping time in the pool or open water. This multimedia training plan includes 42 instructional swim video lessons and demonstrations above and below water for a total of nearly 2.5 hours of instruction. You'll learn the difference between good breathing and bad, good kicking and bad, catch-up drills and balance drills performed correctly versus incorrectly, 5 one-on-one athlete coaching lessons on deck, how to flip turn underwater, and so much more. Each order comes with a detailed 30-day training calendar designed to help you swim faster and more efficiently than ever before. Visit endurancehour.com and get started today.